This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Knowledgeable.
Listen, here's what's wrong with your hypothesis, your theorem, your supposition, your postulate.
Honest.
If that front ain't in gangsta, your back end won't be able to show its full potential.
Understanding.
You're going to suck. You're going to suck for the next couple of years.
Passionate.
I'm all over social media. I live it.
This is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hashtag facts.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
Under a minute to go here in the first half. Stunning. 27-point lead. Down goes Johnson. Three.
Oh, no.
They're shredding him.
That was an unbelievably embarrassing Game 7 performance at home by the best team during the regular season, the Phoenix Suns. They trailed by 42 points in this game at one point. 42 points. The Suns had 27 at halftime and 50 at the end of the third quarter. 50 points. They needed to score 40 in the fourth to get to 90 in total and only lose by 33. Good morning. Sunday that has reflected very much the NBA playoffs as a whole. We saw two beatdowns, a 28-point beatdown by the Celtics of the Milwaukee Bucks in a seventh and deciding game, which you felt right from the beginning that crowd was going to be very difficult to overcome. And then a stunner in Game 7 in Phoenix last night, where the best player on the floor was the best player on the floor by a lot. Luka Doncic at halftime had 27 points, and Devin Booker had 2 on 0 for 7 from the floor. By the way, you remember Spencer Dinwiddie? He was traded for to be the Washington Wizards point guard, a player that I was excited to see, but for whatever reason, it didn't work out here. And people here, for whatever reason, some players, maybe even the head coach, didn't warm to Spencer Dinwiddie. He had 21 in the first half and ended up scoring 30 in the game. Luka played 30 minutes and scored 35 points, had 10 rebounds and 4 assists on 12 of 19 from the floor, 6 of 11 from behind the arc, and what was really one of the more stunning Game 7 wins by a road team I can ever remember. I cannot remember a team at home as the number one seed being dominated the way they were. It's been a long time since a number one seed and a defending Western Conference champion has been eliminated in the first round. The lead actually at one point was 46 points. I wrote down 42 in my notes, but it was actually 46 points, as a friend of mine quickly just texted me. The lead at one point was 46 points. We saw, by the way, in these playoffs, the Dallas Mavericks will be facing the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Golden State trailed Memphis in this series at one point in a game by 55 points. There have been a lot of one-sided games. Chris Paul says he's not retiring. He says he's coming back despite what was an absolute horrendous performance by Chris Paul. Top 5 point guard? No, he's not. Okay, he's not a top 5 point guard of all time. I'm not going to let the performances of a very older point guard in this league at 37 years old dissuade me from claiming that Chris Paul's more likely than not a top 10 point guard of all time, but he's not a top 5 point guard. He does not deserve to be in the same category of conversation of people like Magic Johnson and someone like Oscar Robertson. He just doesn't, and certainly not Isaiah Thomas either. What a performance by Luka Doncic, who really is quite the clever creator and just an incredible shooter with a body that is able, even without super speed or athleticism, but he is quick. He's quick-handed, and he's quick with his feet as well. He's able to create incredible separation and knock down shots from all over. Somebody sent me a tweet that somebody sent, and I can't find it, that he's the closest thing to Bird that we've ever seen. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but Luka's a special player. I actually think Dallas has a chance. I have not looked at the odds because I haven't been betting here, Brendan, recently, so I don't know what the odds are. Have you looked them up for the Western Conference Finals, both series?
I have not yet, no. I'm going to need to
Golden
do that
State's
right
going to be favored, but I don't see them as an overwhelming favorite in this series. Do you?
I'm going to say they're probably like a minus 200 favorite.
Will you look that up, please? And same with Boston, Miami, because I'm curious to see how the boys in the desert are viewing the Western Conference Finals in particular. I think Dallas is playing very well right now. They've got incredible, you know, production coming from multiple players, including one off the bench. I mean, Jalen Brunson's been incredible. He was incredible when Luka was hurt earlier in the playoffs in their first round series. And Spencer Dinwiddie last night off the bench with 30 points on 11 of 15 shooting. He's been really, really good since Dallas acquired him, averaging in the last, he had 15 off the bench in 21 minutes in their game 6 win over Phoenix, which was also a blowout win. They won their last two games over Phoenix by 27 points and by 33 points, neither game being very competitive. The early day game was Boston. After winning, you know, you had to figure after they went into Milwaukee on Friday night and really laid the wood to the Bucks with an incredible performance by Jason Tatum, who had 46. I think we can say safely that Jason Tatum, if he's not in the top five of players right now, is certainly approaching very quickly the top five players in the NBA. They didn't need 46 from him yesterday after taking a 5-point halftime lead and then taking a 15-point lead into the fourth quarter as they pulled away. But he was outstanding, and the Celtics have been the team that's been able to produce so many different double-digit scores during the course of the playoffs. There have been so many different players that have stepped up in key spots. Horford's done it. Smart's done it. Jaylen Brown's done it. Grant Williams has done it. Jason Tatum obviously has done it. And they will get Miami in what should be a very interesting Eastern Conference Finals against another great player right now in Jimmy Butler. The Caps, well, they're done again. They're done again in the first round after losing on Friday night in overtime 4-3. And that's four straight first round exits since the Stanley Cup. The two of those exits have been in final game, closeout game, overtime games, to Carolina in double overtime in a game 7 at home, and this one in overtime at home 4-3 to the Panthers, where guess who scored the game winner once again? Carter Verhaeghe with his second overtime game winner of the series. We found out that that Tom Wilson was seriously injured and was never coming back in this series, and that Alex Ovechkin was also never completely healthy in the series. The Panthers, look, were the number one seed heading in to the postseason, not just the Eastern Conference Finals, but the postseason in general. And the Caps pushed them. The Caps pushed them in a major way. The Caps had a chance to win three of the games they lost. You had a late third period lead in game four. You had a 3-0 lead in game five, and in game six, the Capitals also had in that game a 2-1 lead heading into the early in the third period as well, when Backstrom put him up 2-1. So you had three leads. One significant lead in game five, two leads in the third period. You lost all three of those games, and the Capitals go down to Florida in a game that they really appeared to be very ready to play. They got performances, good performances by a lot of players in this series, including their goaltender, Samsonov. But the Caps are out for the fourth straight year in the first round. Let's not forget, you know, this would be ultra painful to Caps fans if they had not gotten the Cup in 2018. That buys you a lot. It certainly buys Ted a lot as the owner. It buys Alex Ovechkin a lot. It won't ever be forgotten. But what can also be said and be questioned as to why during the Alex Ovechkin era have the Capitals been able to advance past the second round just one time. That one time being in 2018 when they won the Stanley Cup. The Capitals have been, for the last, you know, nearly 40 seasons in this town, a very successful outfit. They've made the Stanley Cup playoffs 32 times in the last 39 seasons. The problem is that 29 of those 32 playoff seasons have ended in the first or second round. And four straight first-round exits is a painful way to wind down the Alex Ovechkin career, and you wouldn't have seen it coming necessarily after the Cup. Now, you knew it was an older team, and you knew that the window was closing. The window was the proverbial sports window or championship window was closing before the 2018 season began. So it is, in many ways, it should be more closed now 4 years later. But Ovechkin's had these wonderful seasons, including a 50-goal season this year, and there is the thought that he will eventually pass Gretzky in a Capitals uniform by the year 2024 at some point. As a playoff team, I'm sure the Capitals are not going away as a playoff contender. As a championship contender, they're not. And Greg Wyshynski, who is the senior NHL writer for ESPN.com, ESPN and ESPN.com, he's going to join us at 8 a.m. this morning. And we'll probably have a couple of Caps guests on this week, because I think the big picture question is what to do now. Is this really what they are? You know, a playoff team with a guy going for the all-time goal-scoring record over the next few years, but not legitimately championship quality. And if that's true, and I don't know if it's true or not, this would not be one of my areas of strength here, but that's why we'll have people on to discuss this. If that's true, well, why are they going down that path? You know, is Alex Ovechkin even the issue? He probably is not. Alex Ovechkin is probably one of the reasons and one of the primary reasons they were in the postseason to begin with this year, even if they were the eighth seed. They were never in danger at any point this season, even though they were the eighth seed, of missing the postseason. They were clear from the team that was ninth and pushing for one of those two wild cards. And they were very close to finishing third in their division and getting a first-round matchup with the New York Rangers, which the Pittsburgh Penguins just got, and after holding a 3-1 series lead, even though they missed Crosby there for a couple of games, they got him back for Game 7 last night, they lost. I ran into a couple of people yesterday who as hardcore Caps fans, who said to me, well, tonight, as long as the Penguins lose. I get that sentiment to a certain degree. I do. I mean, I understand the arch rival moving on and potentially winning a cup makes it doubly painful. But the bottom line is the Caps have exited the first round four straight years. It's amazing that it's been that long since they hoisted the cup in Game 5 out in Las Vegas, after they came from 3-2 down to beat Tampa Bay in the Eastern Conference Finals. Since they fell behind 2-1 and came back to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins for the first time in Game 6 on a koozie goal in overtime. It seems like it isn't that long ago, but they just finished up their fourth straight first-round exit. And the NHL had some phenomenal first-round series, and the Rangers did after falling behind last night. They were down 3-2 going into the third period to Pittsburgh. They rallied, tied the game, and they won the game in overtime. So they advance to the next round. The NHL had a wonderful first round with five game sevens. The Capitals, one of those teams that got close to forcing a seventh and deciding game, but not getting there ultimately. Tough season. Greg Wyshynski will join us later on in the program at 8 a.m., and we will discuss really what's next for the Caps, because I think what happened to the Caps is they just got beat by a better team, even though they put up, you know, quite the effort in a series in which they weren't necessarily supposed to be super competitive in. You know, if you looked at a lot of the projections, they were in the 5-6 game range. I saw some 4-2s, saw a lot of Panthers in 5. But the Caps losing in 6 games, it was a tight-knit 6 games. I mean, you had all of these games were right there with the exception of Game 2. And even in Game 2, it was a 2-1 game midway through the second period, and then Florida unloaded, ended up winning 5-1, and the Caps' best game of the series obviously came in Game 3, although the Game 1 win in Florida was the game in which I think they frustrated Florida the most, and it was the game in which Florida probably was the tightest. You know, they hadn't won a series since 1996. They were the number one seed with the most points, President's Trophy winner during the regular season, and they were tight in Game 1. It allowed the Caps to jump out. Games 4 and 5 will ultimately be the games that they look back on and say, we had a 2-1 lead with just over 2 minutes to go in regulation in Game 4, and we had a 3-0 lead in the second period of Game 5. Even if they go on to win one of those two games, doesn't mean they win the series. But the Caps certainly had a chance to more than make it a 7-game and even more respectable series. But it was pretty damn respectable. But again, it's a first-round loss. And since getting rid of Barry Trotz, who got fired by the Islanders late last week, Peter Laviolette and company are 0-4 in the postseason. So again, we'll talk to somebody who has a greater sense of what would potentially happen with the Caps, what the decision-making will be here in the offseason. We'll do that with Greg Wyshynski at 8 a.m. We've got a couple of what do you gots. Chris Cooley's film breakdown of Cole Turner. I'll just sort of kind of get to the lead here, and I'm going to play this for you in about 15 minutes. He rather likes Cole Turner, the tight end from Nevada, selected in the latter part of the 5th round after they selected Sam Howell. When we come back, we've got a what do you got, and it deals with the NFL broadcasting world. We'll get to that when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
All right.
What do you got?
First of all, I want to give some mention to Maryland's men's lacrosse team. They beat Vermont 21-5 in their first round NCAA tournament game. It's the largest margin of victory ever in an NCAA tournament lacrosse game. I would have thought that a 16-goal difference would have been something that has happened before. Maryland hasn't lost or undefeated. They're number one in the country, and they're the favorite to win. Was it last year that they lost to Virginia in overtime on that goal? Was that last year, Brendan?
I don't know. My Maryland lacrosse history in front of me. I think last year. I'm not 100%.
Do you have the odds on the Western Conference Finals yet?
The Warriors are -230. The Celtics are -180.
Okay. Minus 230. What's the comeback on that? Plus 175, something like
plus
that?
Plus 190.
You're not getting me back off. I'm on the wagon right now. If that makes it sound like I have a problem. I don't think I have a problem. I'm actually a little bit surprised that it's minus 230. Maybe I shouldn't be. But I think Golden State had a couple of results in the last series that makes them look at times vulnerable, even though I love the way they play. I'm not going to be surprised if Dallas wins this series. So the What Do You Got deals with Drew Brees. I don't know how many people have followed this story, but Drew Brees, apparently, according to the New York Post's Andrew Marchand, is out at NBC. You know, he was signed, remember, while he was still playing, similar to Tom Brady, not the same money, to take over at NBC when his football playing career ended. And the thought was that eventually Drew Brees would replace Chris Collinsworth in the Sunday night booth with Al Michaels or Mike Tirico. It's Tirico now and Collinsworth in the Sunday night booth. Drew Brees called some Notre Dame games last year. And then, unfortunately for him, as it turns out, called the wild card round game between the Bengals and the Raiders. And that did not go well at all. Now, I thought some of the criticism was a little bit over the top. He's brand new at this. The problem with Brees, and I said it at the time, there's not a lot of personality in Drew Brees in the broadcast. This is not Tony Romo. Okay, this is not John Madden by a long shot. And we don't know what Brady's going to be like, but that's a different subject altogether. NBC basically is throwing in the towel. They are bailing. They are cutting bait on Drew Brees. And so Drew Brees put out a tweet that said, despite speculation from media about my future this fall, I'm currently undecided. I may work for NBC. I may play football again. I may focus on business and philanthropy. I may train for the pickleball tour. By the way, that is my new passion. I've now played, I don't know, a dozen times over the last month. I love pickleball. I may be a senior golf tour guy. Coach my kids or all of the above, I'll let you know. There is some speculation perhaps that Fox will give him an opportunity to be in the booth. He wants to be in the booth. He wasn't that great in studio, although his predictions, I think, went better than most of the others. Look, some people just aren't cut out for this. Drew Brees right now looks like a guy that's uncomfortable doing it. He wasn't very good at it when he was doing it. It takes a certain kind of personality. It takes a certain kind of quickness and sharpness. And he didn't seem to have any of the above as a broadcaster. If he goes back to football, what does that mean for Jameis Winston in New Orleans? Who knows? I bet he doesn't play football again. All right. When we come back, Chris Cooley's film breakdown of Cole Turner, the receiver from Nevada, selected in the fifth round. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Virginia did beat Maryland last year in the NCAA lacrosse championship. That was last year. We're getting a little bit mixed up with the last couple of years because not everything was played in its normal spot, although I think lacrosse was. I believe Maryland has Virginia next. After crushing Vermont 21-10, Maryland gets Virginia this coming Saturday, I believe. Might be Sunday, in the next round of the lacrosse championship. So there you go. There's your update on that. All right, Chris Cooley joined me on my podcast on Friday and did two more film breakdowns. He did Brian Robinson Jr., the running back from Alabama, selected in the third round. And then he did Cole Turner, the tight end, and I told him, because Cooley didn't pay attention to anything this season and didn't pay attention to the draft until I gave him the assignment of doing some film breakdown of some of the draft choices. We played for you last week his breakdowns of Sam Howell and Jahan Dotson. This week we'll do Cole Turner and Brian Robinson Jr. This was Cooley, and he was rather optimistic about Turner. I told him before we watched it, I said, I think you're going to like this guy. Not entirely sure, but I think you might like him. This was Cooley on the Nevada tight end selected by Washington in the fifth round.
Cole Turner, 6 foot six, big dude. Listed him at Nevada at 240. I think most people probably know this. He's thin. He's got a big frame. He could easily be 255. I don't know if he needs to be. So before you get into it, like, Cole Turner was a receiver that changed into tight end position at Nevada. He's not a receiver, but my God, he can make some plays, man. Like, I think anybody that watched some of the Cole Turner stuff, you got to be really impressed. Some how many back shoulder fades did he catch for touchdowns?
I know.
Like, at some point, if you're Fresno State, you might want to put somebody else out there besides the 5'10 corner. Like, they've thrown him 19 back shoulder fades. Maybe put a taller dude on him.
Be a
maybe,
good idea.
I don't know, maybe.
Good idea.
You know, if you're Boise State, like, hey, probably going to throw a back shoulder fade from the 5-yard line to this dude. And he gets them all. He's got a really good feel for going up and getting the ball in the air. He tracks it well. He high points it really well. He had to be a basketball player. He had to have been.
Yes.
Like, he manipulates his body like he's getting a rebound. He goes up. He high points the ball. Maybe a basketball player.
No doubt.
At least he looks like it.
I think he was. I'm not 100% sure, but when I started watching the highlights when they worked out Carson Strong and Cole Turner privately before the draft, yeah, I was like, this dude is definitely a basketball player. I mean, he boxes out on some of those 50-50 balls like a 6'7 forward.
That's exactly what he does. So they used him everywhere. Like, they split him out everywhere. They used him at X. They used him at Z. They used him in a slot. They used him off the ball at tight end. I don't think he ever really put his hand in the ground. They used him all over the place. And, like, I think he's a guy, to me, that has an awesome feel for space. Like, one, he can get off the line of scrimmage. Like, he's got a good wiggle, like a quick double or triple stick, like 1-2 jab off the line of scrimmage, get skinny, slip, evade downfield. Does a really good job of initially getting himself downfield. Two, and this is what I think is the best thing about Cole Turner and watching him play. And this is something that you can't teach it. It's a different deal. He finds open space. Like, your route can call for this. Like, we want you to run straight here and over here. But, like, he finds a way to manipulate the stem of the route to open space to get into a good look for his quarterback. I just don't think it's teachable. I think that guys just naturally do that, and Cole Turner does that. And so, in saying that, I think he's a guy that's going to catch a bunch of balls in the NFL, period. Like, right there, he's going to catch a bunch of balls. I'm not going to sit here and say he's Travis Kelce or he's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler, but he's a guy that's going to get open for you. He's also a guy that, like, he's not overly fast, right? But he plays faster than he actually is, in my opinion. And he's getting downfield quickly because of his ability to evade initially. And his stem, he's able to get himself downfield. And in that, that's why I think you see him catching a lot of seam balls and a lot of kind of vertical-type routes. It's also what Nevada does. But I don't question really the speed. Like, I think he was a 4.76 guy at the combine.
I thought he ran better than that. Didn't he run better than that? I thought he ran like 4.55 or something like that.
No.
You sure?
I looked it up an hour ago.
Okay.
You got a computer in front of you. Look it up.
I am right now. So hold on.
And why I would bet that
4.76. You're right.
In just saying that, I did look it up. But in just saying that, for a tall guy, he doesn't open up his stride. Like, he's a short stride guy. Mm-hmm. But I don't hate that. Like, I was a fairly short stride guy. He runs with decent balance. To me, he separates pretty well. He doesn't separate, like, he's not going to, like, scare you, blow by you, separate, but he's got open space. So a foot is open in the NFL. And with his awareness to find that space, it's pretty awesome. He extends to catch ball. He's got very good hands. Like, there's a few drops in there, but that's not his hands. That's discipline or whatever, you know. That's lack of focus in whatever moment. And you don't like that, but it's better than a guy that can't catch.
Right.
Like, he's not stone. He's got great hands to me. Great hands. He can one-hand it. He can go out way out in front of his body and get it. I think he's got good hips. He can open his hips and rotate and get a ball. To me, he really versatile in that aspect. Production is really good, Kev. And in the positives, I would much rather have a guy that produces than a guy that runs a 4.45 or a 4.45. And when you watch a full Nevada game, I watched three full Nevada games, they are always trying to get him the ball because they trust him. They know he's going to get it done. They trust him, and he produces. Like, that's what I want in anyone, in any player, is a guy that's producing. So really impressed with that stuff. Some of the downside, not used a bunch in line, really, as a tight end. He's okay as far as footwork as a blocker. He's willing as a blocker, but he's soft and he's way upright. Like, for a tall dude, you understand that, but he blocks way upright and he's not a physical blocker by any means, but that's somewhat, unfortunately, going away with some of the tight ends and what college football is. They did ask him to block some, you know, at the line of scrimmage without his hand in the ground. He's got a concept and an idea and he knows what he's doing. He's average. He's, at best, average, a little below average as a blocker. He does not show me on film or seem to be a very strong player at this point. Like, he does get banged around. I mentioned his ability to evade, his ability to get... But if a linebacker hits him 3 yards downfield, he's knocked dynamically off his route. The times he can get punked in that fashion. He's never going to move someone as a blocker. He's going to get banged around a little bit. He's good. He's decent as far as run after the catch. I don't see him as, like, incredibly versatile as a run after the catch guy. And watching him is funny. Like, a couple years ago, I went to the combine. He kind of reminds me of Gesicki.
Yeah.
He doesn't move as well as Gesicki.
Right. I was going to say Gesicki can motor a little bit.
Gesicki is like a true runner. Vertical jump, insane, explosive. The movement patterns to me are a lot the same. Gesicki's just got a little bit more quick twitch to him. I mean, honestly, like overall, I think this is a great pick for them in the sixth round. I think he's going to produce. I think they're going to have to figure out where they can put him, where they can place him. But I've seen so many tight ends in the NFL that can't block at all that end up having phenomenal careers. And they'll put him on the backside of runs. They'll cross him across the line of scrimmage and just ask him to bang into the backside defensive end. They'll chip with him. They'll do, like, that isn't a deal breaker. Like, I think some of why he didn't go any earlier is maybe some of that unknown. Like, well, he's a receiver at Nevada. It's a smaller school. He played a lot of receiver even after he transitioned to tight end. He's in the slot. He was split out. Do we know if he can truly threaten anyone vertically down the field? I think he can. Can he get something in that 5 to 6 yard range? Can he separate on third down against tight man coverage inside? Will be a huge question for him. You know, does he have enough against a safety or against a nickel corner to be able to win in third down situations? Will be a huge question to whether or not he's a great tight end or just a guy that is a 40 catch a year guy. I think it's an upgrade. And look, I think Logan Thomas has done a terrific job for them over the last couple of years. It's a big upgrade if he continues to grow a little bit, in my opinion. I think Cole Turner will be a good player. I think he'll play a lot this year. I think he'll contribute for them this year. And I think he has the potential to really grow into a pretty good prospect.
You said a couple of things. First of all, I think it's a really interesting thing that you said relating to drops. You know, a lot of people who, you know, just look at numbers and analytics will look at drop numbers and say, well, he's got too many drops. And you made a really interesting observation, because when you watch Cole Turner, you see he's got excellent hands. He's a hands catcher. He's got soft hands. And if he's got drops, they could be more about concentration, which is fixable more than having boards for hands. You know, he's got really good hands. So, you know, that goes for all of you, you know, draft experts and analytics experts. You know, sometimes those numbers can be a little bit misleading because they can coach some of the other stuff in. Like, this dude has I would bet any amount of money he was a basketball player. I mean, he just has such great feel. That's number one. Number two, you mentioned he's got really good feel for space, and you see that especially him finding holes against zone coverage. Were you good at that? I think you were, right?
It was one of the things I did best.
Right. Were you more comfortable facing zone defenses, or were you or press man or just regular man coverage?
Zone.
So you loved it when you
knew. It changed throughout. Like, there were times where man coverage was great. Like, press man coverage, I could have done a lot better job in my career figuring out how to get off and separate against press man coverage. I played in a bunch of different systems and stuff, and we did things different in every way. So, you know, I got better at it, and then we'd change, and I'd get better at it and change. But, like, that improvisation to zone coverage was always there for me. I was always able to do that.
Do you see him being used against teams that, you know, are primarily going to play zone, and maybe, you know, some of the red zone stuff against man coverage using his size in the red zone, but that he's going to be a really good, you know, guy in the slot, perhaps, against zone coverage?
I think it's impossible to say that he's a guy that we're going to play against zone coverage teams. He might be a guy that produces early in his career more against zone coverage, but if he's going to be a good player, he's going to have to win against man-to-man coverage.
But he's not going to have to block.
At some point, he's going to have to block. He has to block at some point. He was all league in basketball his senior year.
Oh, he was?
In Oregon.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. It's so easy to see that, though.
Athlete.
No, I don't think he's going to. Like, I think he can beat man-to-man coverage. I don't see him as a guy that can't beat man-to-man coverage at all. I don't want to come across that way. Like, I think he's a guy that if you give him a little bit of space initially, he's got enough shake to create space. If he can do something at the top of his route in the NFL to separate, he can win. Where was he ranked in the tight ends? I didn't even look at that. He had to be in the top five or six, didn't he?
I'd have to go look at that. You know, Carson Wentz has, you know, the thought is that he's always done better with bigger targets, with bigger catch radius guys. You know, Zach Ertz, Alshon Jeffrey, Michael Pittman Jr. in Indianapolis as an example here recently. And, you know, Jahan Dotson, even though he is only 5'11", has, as you saw, a huge catch radius. This guy's got a big-time catch radius, don't you think? Not to mention he's huge.
Huge. No, he's got a huge catch radius. It's like he looks like, this is just for fun. It's not like he's there, but some of the way he moves, it looks like Gonzalez.
He really does have a great feel for space.
Great. And a lot of it, he does remind me a little of Tony. Tony was actually a pretty good blocker. But he reminds me of Tony Gonzalez a little bit. And just in the way he moves and the way he attacks the ball. Like, let's not get it confused that I'm saying he's going to be Tony Gonzalez. Hope he is. I like him a lot. You told me I would like him, and I do. I like him a lot. I'm excited for him.
I think the comp is Jimmy Graham. I mean, it would be phenomenal.
I love that comp. I think that's a great comp.
And Graham was a big time college basketball player.
Yeah, he is a lot like Graham, like another big basketball player, Antonio Gates. He's not as quick twitch as Antonio Gates. Like Antonio Gates had such a quick twitch that's not necessarily him. But this dude's going to play. Like, he's going to be a player. I would bet you on that.
Yeah, I'm excited about him. I'm excited about of their picks, and I know you haven't looked at all of them, and you'll get your assignment for next week after this call. But I love Dotson, and I love Turner. Like, they were too productive to let any of the other – to let any number really get in the way of – that's why I loved Kyle Hamilton in the draft, the linebacker from Notre Dame. I don't give a shit that he ran 4.7. If you watched him play, he never looked slow. He was never not there because he is long-armed and he anticipated well. This dude just has that feel that, you know – of just being able to find the right spot, and he catches everything. Maybe he didn't have a drop problem. I forget, but for some reason, I think somebody.
Well, I mean, he had a couple of drops. I wouldn't call it a drop problem, though.
Yeah.
This had him ranked 11th.
This was the first year you really didn't work with any college tight ends, right? Or did you?
Yeah. No.
You did or did not?
I did not.
Yeah. What did you think of Carson Strong?
Hold on. Carson Strong?
The quarterback for Nevada?
I don't know. Oh, I like him. He lets it go, man.
Yeah, I mean, he was thought
to... He moved in the pocket pretty well. I thought he's got some stuff to him.
He apparently has, like... a replacement cadaver in his leg or knee or something, and that kept people off of him. But he, you know, he's a big dude, and he signed. Most people thought he would get drafted, but he got signed as an undrafted free agent by Philadelphia.
I think he's got a chance. You'd worry about that, obviously, but as an undrafted, even if I liked him and had that issue, like I. 6th, 7th round, I don't care if I like the guy. I'll take a shot.
Right.
So I didn't look at stats. Dude, this Cole Turner had,
I know,
2 years ago, 49 receptions for 605 yards, 9 touchdowns.
I know. Yeah.
62 this year for 677 and 10 touchdowns.
111 catches, 678, 19 touchdowns.
In part, that average is down to around 10 yards a catch. I bet you, because 7 of those touchdowns are back shoulder fades from the 3.
Right. Yeah. There were several of those. And he seemed to catch all of them.
Like every one. I mean, he had an amazing catch against Boise State that was he didn't come down inbounds with, but one-handed and almost got it inbounds, like vertically down the field. The dude he's got ball skills. He's got enough athleticism.
I thought you would like him.
Because he's just always detached. So anyone, you're going, okay, what will he do? What can he do for us? So.
Well, he at the very least is somebody you'd love to see in the red zone with, you know, Logan Thomas out there and having 2 6'6" dudes. By the way, keep in mind too, the 49 catches his junior year was the shortened
in 9 games.
Was the shortened season. The COVID season. So he was outrageously productive that year. He had a game that year, and I was looking at this and I'm trying to pull it up now, but it was like 14 catches in a game or something for like
175 yards.
Yeah.
Against Hawaii.
12 catches, 175 yards against Hawaii, right.
This site I pulled up has this conclusion. Finding the right fit is going to be the problem and critical for Turner.
Say that again, you broke up.
Finding the right fit problem. And having the right fit will be critical for his success. Let's not be so dumb here. Is that not if like 90% of players in the NFL?
Yeah.
What do you do? What do the Patriots do? Oh, they find the right fit for all their players and play them accordingly to how they fit. And if my tight end isn't an online tight end, but he can go up and make plays in the middle of the field and do everything I want him to do and challenge linebackers and safeties from something displaced, I think I'll just do that.
Right. You don't sign a man corner in free agency to a big deal and then play mostly zone coverage.
So yeah, you just don't do that. You don't sign a cover two safety and pay him X amount of money and then have him as a punt protector.
Adam Archuleta. They paid him a lot of money. Somebody fell in love with him. Just not anybody in the football operation.
He's a guy that has all the athletic tools and is all the innate abilities. You're just refining stuff with this dude.
Chris Cooley on Cole Turner. He clearly likes him and thinks he can contribute right away. You know, one of the things to watch, obviously, over the next couple of months will be the readiness of Logan Thomas. That will be, you know, a key issue for the team and whether or not Cole Turner or a guy like Cole Turner is on the field to begin with. Remember, Logan Thomas's, you know, knee injury came in early December. I know he was banged up before then, but the one that sidelined him for the year and still has him sidelined came in late December. So there's no guarantee that Logan Thomas is going to be ready for the regular season. And, of course, the other player on the other side of the ball to keep an eye on is Chase Young, whose, you know, rehab continues, and we'll see if he is ready for training camp. Both of those players were key misses last year. Of course, Chase Young not playing nearly as well heading into his injury, and maybe Logan Thomas was missed as much. But Cole Turner looks like a guy that can be productive at the next level. These things, you never know. I mean, we could be sitting here a year from now and somebody might say, yeah, but remember Cooley's film breakdown of Cole Turner? What happened to him? But he looks like a guy, fifth rounder, that's going to make the team and be an early contributor. 119 catches over the last 2 years, one of those a shortened season. 111 catches, 19 touchdowns, including 62 of them his senior year. Okay, later on this week, maybe tomorrow or Wednesday, we will get and you will hear Cooley's film breakdown of Brian Robinson Jr. John Keim will be our guest next. We'll get back to the Caps at 8 with Greg Wyshynski. And coming up next hour after John joins us, we'll go back to the schedule because Washington's schedule includes what we think, most think, is a much more desirable schedule than the one they had a year ago, at least as of now. But one of the things that's key in evaluating a schedule is when you play people, not who you play. And somebody did that in great detail and found out that Washington's at a disadvantage more than we thought on Friday. We'll get to that a little bit next hour as well. Keim next, Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, the team980.com. And we are also on the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.